So very warm welcome again here in Berlin, and welcome to the 7th HBB TV Symposium, Growing Value Through HBB TV.
Well, we hope you had a really good night's sleep, and maybe some of you award winners were celebrating the night away with your success.
So others might have visited Berlin by night, or you even tried a late night currywurst, which is the famous sausage with curry sauce, which we could get all night long here in Berlin.
And we do want to thank the sponsor for this morning's coffee, and also the coffee break later on, which was Eutelsat. So thank you very much to them. So however you spent the evening, we hope you're ready to resume the cut and thrust of the symposium. We've got plenty of panel discussions and keynotes, but also some roundtable discussions, which hopefully we can get you all involved in discussing. We'll be doing taking more questions from Slido, so if you like submitting questions that way, please go to sli.do to access that, maybe do some polls as well, and also please be prepared to put your hand up and ask questions to the microphone, because then we can make it a little bit more two-way and interactive. And if you're so disposed, please do tweet and post about us using the hashtag HBBTVBerlin. We do have a Wi-Fi network. It may work slightly better today with less of us in the room, but apologies, it is the infrastructure is what it is.
Also, thinking ahead, there will be a taxi list which is laid out by the buffet during the morning coffee and lunch break, so you can write down your time of leaving, so we can order a taxi for you already. And I also would like to remind all the speakers of the morning that at the beginning of the next break, we will have a photo call of the speakers all together after you get rid of your headset, which will be in the back of this room. Thank you very much for joining us for the picture. So, and now, who else could possibly open the second day of this conference other than the chairman of the HBB TV Association, Vincent Grivet? So please welcome Vincent for his keynote and speech of the State Nation on the achievements and future outlooks of HBB TV.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Karine. I think it's easy and a pleasure to talk about the state of the nation when the nation is HBB TV, and when I look at all of you here at this room and at the day that we had yesterday, where I really think we are living very exciting times for HBB TV. So it's a pleasure to share with you this state of the nation address this morning. But let us not be ignorant, or let us not fool ourselves about everything being easy. We have an OTT wave which is accelerating. Actually, I came across some statistics from a company named Conviva, who is gathering statistics on the world global streaming traffic. And last year, they reported a growth by 63% of viewing hours of streaming television and video. So that is a lot. Even maybe more worrying, the OTT traffic and consumption starts to look very much like TV. So it's not something different, it is something that is very close to TV and probably wants to take into the TV business. Where do I take that from? Fact number one. The segment or the device which has known the highest growth rate last year for streaming usage is the TV set. 145% of growth for streaming on the TV sets, PC minus 18%, and mobile and tablet 50% growth, which is less than the overall growth. So very much OTT has left the kind of exotic devices like tablets and PCs, and OTT streaming is moving to the main TV screen, because this is the comfortable screen to watch TV. The TV screen now represents 57% of the viewing hours of streaming. It is 9 points more than last year. 50% of the viewing hours are long-form content. It is another sign that streaming and OTT is looking more and more like TV. People are not using streaming anymore, or are less using streaming, to watch strange videos of cats that are drinking milk or whatever. They are using streaming to watch the normal, long-form, quality TV content. 2 times last year. The other very interesting factor is that 75%, believe it, 75% of the volume of streaming hours are spent viewing content from the so-called virtual MVPD. MVPD meaning multiple video program distributor, meaning basically a bouquet or a cable TV bundle that many people are used to watch. So really, OTT is not another world where only the youngsters would spend a lot of time. OTT is a new way of consuming TV. And this is, of course, creating a growth of non-linear TV. For instance, in France, in 2016, non-linear TV watching was only 6%. A year later, in 2017, it was 10%. In the UK, where the phenomenon started earlier, it's actually more or less stable because we had about 14% minor growth. But the interesting thing, or the worrying thing, is that the amount of linear watching has actually decreased by 9 minutes last year. So these are major challenges to the broadcast and TV industry. What are these challenges? User habits and preference are changing. People, they continue to love watching TV, but they like to do it in a different way. And actually, I think one of the very important things for us here in this room is that it's not so much an issue of content, it's more an issue of context. If you call context the way, the surrounding, the style in which people connect to TV content. The interesting thing, or the delicate thing, is that a number of smart and very powerful OTT companies, which are born especially for OTT, and they do only OTT, are taking advantage in a very smart way of these changes in consumer habits, and they are creating the offers that exactly address the expectation of consumers. Another interesting factor, which is a challenge, is that there is a kind of hyper choice of content. We've seen from Abby yesterday some very interesting figures which go into this direction, that never there has been such a large choice of quality content. And the point is that this premium quality content is actually using new circuits to reach to the consumers, and the kind of natural monopoly of broadcasters and TV channel to be the only way for quality content to reach to the consumer, that monopoly doesn't exist anymore. There are new unconventional circuits for the content to reach the consumer. And finally, last but not least, the world of advertising, the world of marketing, is moving from a fire and forget tradition where you would send advertisement and just hope and bet that people would watch this advertisement and this will drive your sales up. The advertisers are moving into a style where they want to know exactly when and where and to whom they bring the advertisement, and they want to be sure about the results of this advertisement before they pay for the media space. And broadcast TV was not exactly like that in the past. So we have a number of very, very significant challenges to address. I think for most of you in this room, and certainly for me and for my colleagues in the HBB TV steering group, we are definitely part of the camp who thinks that the broadcasters and the broadcast world are not the born losers of this change of paradigms. The broadcast world and the broadcaster is seated on some extremely strong assets of know-how, of brands, of viewership, of content, and there is no reason why these assets will not be leveraged in the future world. The broadcast world just needs to make a turn. Sometimes it may be a small turn, sometimes it may be a big turn, but there is a turn to be made. The broadcast world needs to adapt to this new context. And I think the short version of that adaptation is that the broadcast need to embrace and to reappropriate for themselves the concept of OTT and digital. It is certainly not a question of replacing the traditional broadcast by a pure OTT approach. I think some broadcasters have done a little bit of that, and I think it's fair to say that it has not been successful, because the strengths they have in the broadcast world, if they take a pure YouTube attitude, they are losing their strengths, and they are not making an advantage and a leverage of their strengths. So it's not a matter of giving up of traditional broadcast, it's a matter of complementing broadcast to enrich it. And I think yesterday we heard from Paul from IHS the best proof all of us could dream, which was the Bodyguard story, that actually the Bodyguard success was created or helped a little bit by the non-linear viewing and OTT viewing, but the success in the end materialized as a classical broadcast success of live viewership. And the very good news for all of you today, for all of us today, is that you are in the right room, because HBBTV is here and can help the broadcast to meet all of these challenges. Again, for those of you who are a little bit new to HBBTV, again, you made the right choice. And let me just refresh everybody very quickly on the mission of HBBTV. The mission of HBBTV, mission number one, is to create an enriched TV experience for the consumers. We are not an organization to defend some privileges or monopolies. We are an organization to create better viewing experience for the consumers. And I think the applications which have been awarded yesterday and recognized yesterday evening in our award ceremony evidence exactly that. We have been recognizing some applications and services which are bringing more value to the consumer. We are here to make an open standard so that it benefits to the whole market. We are here to serve TV set and set-top box. We are not here to arbitrage in a potential fight between TV set and set-top box. HBBTV is suitable for the both world, and it's not for us to choose. HBBTV is broadcast rooted. It is broadcaster friendly. HBBTV does not ignore that not everything happens on broadcast, but HBBTV recognizes the extremely powerful features of broadcast and want to build on this power. HBBTV wants to build new monetization possibilities, and addressability is an extremely important element. And HBBTV is not made for the happy few. HBBTV is meant to provide massive reach of new services. What have we done lately to fulfill that mission? A lot of things. And I will do only the very short version of that, and you will hear more of that from John in a moment. We have published the OPAP about a year ago, and I hope it's going to be one of the major new elements of the dynamic of HBBTV. We have released HBBTV 2.20.2 last February. It's very much geared towards the new sound and image features of television and UHD, very important. We have released, and that is probably not so glamorous and sexy, but I think it is extremely important. We have released the 2018.2 test suite in July, last July. It is made of about 2,000 tests. And I was very happy, although I was not the one making the decision, I was very happy that yesterday evening we recognized in the awards the extremely high importance of the testing suite in HBBTV. Certainly, HBBTV has value to its community because of the specification, but it has value to the community because of the test. If the specification does not come with a suitable, complete, accurate, reliable test suite, I'm afraid it's going to be of much less use, and we need to continue to fight for that. We have released the Dash DRM application. It's been evidenced yesterday, and this is the most striking things we've done last year. Another very important point in the HBBTV news flow, and I would really like to stress that with you, is our new members. In the last 12 months, we have welcomed some very prominent new members, and I know many of them are here today in the room, and I would like again to welcome them, and I think it's very important that HBBTV continues to attract membership. Amlogic, ERT, the Greek public broadcaster, Google, not to name it, and you have seen them on stage yesterday, and I think we can all understand how much they like HBBTV and the kind of things they would like to do with HBBTV. Kineton, Italian technology provider. Rai, the Italian public broadcaster, very happy to have them with us. Roku, maker, maybe the inventor of streaming television and of the streaming set-top box. Sky, not to name them, the major UK pay TV. And Skywars, not very well known in Europe for now, but a very large Chinese maker of chipsets, set-top box, and TV sets sometimes. So we're very happy to have these members with us. A warm welcome to us, and their arrival in HBBTV is a sign of the good health of the nation HBBTV. Another very important element, I think, of our news flow is what happened over the last 4 or 5 years, and if you step back a little bit, I think we can really say with this news flow that HBBTV is sitting at the heart of the TV transformation in Europe, at least, because it already happened, Liz, in Australia, that TV has been transformed with HBBTV. Let's have a look at that. 2015, it was in the UK, with the creation of Freeview Play based on HBBTV 2.0. 2017, Germany, the creation of Freenet TV, the new terrestrial TV with HBBTV 2.0 mandated in this new technical standard, as it was reminded to us by André. 2017, Italy, TVON. 2018, Lovers TV, strongly and legitimately recognized yesterday in the awards. And maybe next year, Salto in France, it was announced, it's not live yet, but it's most likely Salto will make some kind of use of HBBTV. And we know that we have many new countries knocking on the door of HBBTV. So really, HBBTV, I think, is providing the technology foundation for these new national television alliances which are transforming the TV landscape. What's next? A lot of things, of course. What we have engaged, mostly two important things. We have engaged targeted advertisements. That's probably the number one thing on the plate of HBBTV right now. We have engaged ADB, application discovery over broadband. And we are considering a large number of other potential HBBTV enrichments, which are not yet decided. There are new OTT type of technologies that maybe we need to integrate into HBBTV. There are new B2C features like voice activation that needs to be taken into account, new B2B type of features like targeted advertising, and potentially many other things. Important thing for you, because we realize the future is rich of many possibilities, and we need to make rationalized choices, and we need to share these choices with the audience of HBBTV. We're going to create in HBBTV a formal 5 years roadmap process, which did not exist to date in HBB TV. This will start next year, and we hope there will be strong engagement of members into this process to jointly define what HBB TV needs to look like in a few years. We also have our challenges because of this very high and intense activity around us. And I think we need to continue to work very hard and even maybe work harder to fully deliver the HBB TV promise to the market. And we have a number of areas of focus which I would like to share with you. The first one, I've already mentioned that, is the test suite. The test suite is growing because the HBB TV specification is growing, and there is a lot of work to continue to deliver a rich test suite with validated tests. We need, and that's a very positive factor, we have more and more companies who are working developing HBB TV applications. A few years ago, there were only three super expert companies working with HBB TV. Now we have, I will not give a number, but we have a large number of companies, large ones, small ones, a little bit everywhere in the world, and they are making great things with the HBB TV technology. We need to nurture and coach this community of developers. We need to stimulate the availability and to inform on the availability of compliant devices, because of course, for broadcaster and service providers, the existence of compatible device is a very key element. We probably need to be a little bit faster in adopting in HBB TV the surrounding technologies. We need to meet the new user needs, and this is the roadmap process. We need to coach and evangelize the future HBB TV users, and sometimes they may be very far away, not in this room today, etc. We would like to limit the fragmentation, which is created a little bit by the national books, and probably there is more cooperation and dialogue to be held with the national authorities and platforms to try to limit that fragmentation. And finally, we need to put our hands around the GDPR and e-privacy matters. These are not enemies. We're not going to fight GDPR and e-privacy. It would be foolish. It would not be legitimate. But we need to make sure we create the conditions where HBB TV is absolutely compliant with GDPR and e-privacy, and HBB TV usage and possibilities are not unfaithfully constrained by GDPR and e-privacy. So we have a lot to do, and we count on the engagement of members to help us to work harder to deliver the HBB TV promise. In summary, content is king and continues to be king in television as it has always been the case, but context, the way we deliver content, is queen. And HBB TV is here to help broadcasters and broadcast community to protect relevance and preference by creating better accessibility possibilities. OTT and hybrid is a large part of that, and HBB TV is the way to integrate OTT in the classical TV world. There is a B2C side with consumer services, there is a B2B side with advertising and data, and all together we see that HBB TV is really the path to grow the TV business together. Thank you very much. John, I think it's your turn that you need to explain practically how we're going to do that.
Okay, thank you very much for that introduction, and thank you very much, Vincent, also for the aspirational and the motivational talk. My talk is going to be boring by comparison. I apologize. Vincent is far better at doing that sort of thing than I am. So, I had a long thought, hard think about how to explain what HBB TV is doing in a context that actually helps people. So what I ended up with was an HBB TV specification workflow. So we have, like other organizations, we start with requirements. And we have a requirements group that develops those. So if you think there are things that you need to be able to do with HBB TV that you can't, the requirements group is where the discussion has to happen. The one of the two co-chairs of the requirements group is sitting in the far side there, and will be on the next panel. So bother Peter afterwards, or in the corridor, or whatever. Once there are some requirements and they are approved, then there is a specification group that actually writes the specification to those requirements. For my pains, one of my jobs is chair of that. The specification group also handles writing unit test descriptions. So one of our key lessons learned from the beginning of our process was you don't get any unit tests if you basically don't make them a gating factor on something. And we decided we were going to gate spec publication on the availability of the unit test descriptions. And it's worked. I mean, a lot of people are very cynical about sort of having lessons learned activities, that lessons learned just means you write something down, you tick a box, and you ignore them from starting in 5 minutes' time. We have learned this lesson, we've put it as part of our process, and it works. Once we have a spec and the unit test descriptions, they get approved. The next step is we have a supplier evaluation group that basically gets quotations for the test suite, evaluates and recommends to the steering group. They decide who we're going to award a contract to. Then we have the testing group. So we heard yesterday that one of the colleagues from the testing group won the award for the best individual contribution. Van, the chair of the testing group, won that award last year. Van is sitting in the middle of the room. Then when we have a test suite, we have an improving interoperability task force. Bob talked about some of their activities at the end of yesterday. And they basically collect feedback on what is and isn't working in the market. And based on that, that could end up in the steering group, in the specification group, or in the testing group. So this is a little bit of the context of how we work as an organization, but also how you can influence things, how you can contribute, how you can get what you would like to see, and how you can improve HBB TV. So what I'm going to do quickly is I have a couple of slides on each of the different groups to give you a bit of context and to help you understand where your company might be able to actually add some value. So if we start with the requirements group. So most recently, I mean, we've had the whole targeted advertising thing. Angelo explained yesterday that the requirements were largely done in DVB, but not everyone in HBB TV is in DVB, so the HBB TV requirements group got to review the DVB requirements, worked with DVB. The requirements group is also where the thoughts about an HBB TV specification roadmap partly started, and they're going to be working to sort of further detail the roadmap that Vincent just mentioned, and when there is an agreed roadmap, they're going to be the people who have to execute the first stage of it. The specification group, so I put a bit more detail on what Vincent said earlier. So HBB TV 202, what that does is it adds HDR video, high frame rate video, the various next generation audio technologies. It also fixes bugs. Now, bugs are boring, but actually, most of the time, bugs get reported because they cost somebody money. They cost somebody money because they found that different TV sets worked in different ways, or because somebody who was implementing something couldn't work out what the hell the spec meant. So they're not glamorous at all, but actually, in the end, they result in saving money for people. And it's fairly well established in software development that the earlier you find and fix these, the cheaper it is for everybody. So we have bug fixes rolled into 202. We also have a separate bug fix document for those of you who are using 201. They are almost, for all practical purposes, identical, if you discount the new content features. So having a huge debate about moving from 201 plus errata to 202 is sort of a bit weird. Looking forwards, targeted advertising. So one of the questions I was asked yesterday in the hall was, is this going to be HBBTV 2.1, 2.5, 3.0? No. It's going to be a separate, standalone specification, the same as OPApps. It could be rolled into a future HBBTV spec, but that's going to be part of the roadmap discussion. If you think it should be in a future HBBTV spec, come along to the requirements group and participate in the roadmap. I put in a few of the key issues around that we're sort of wrestling with at the moment. So one of the requirements we have is the ability to preload and add into RAM so that it can be it can be guaranteed that it will be played from beginning to end without any glitches, without any buffering, stuff like that. Something that is a big sort of tension is how cleanly and quickly it's needed to transition from the broadcast to the ad and back again. And also, what is good enough? Because it's very easy to spend time and energy coming up with the perfect solution and find you've spent a year longer than you might have done, and it's going to be three times more complicated for people to implement than what is actually needed for the market in the beginning. One of the challenges that was glossed over a bit yesterday was how to ensure that a 30-second ad from RAM can actually replace a 30-second broadcast ad without overlapping the stuff at the beginning and before it and after it. And that is actually quite complicated. If you're particularly interested in that thing, that subject, go to the IRT booth and bother Klaus Merkel and he will explain it to you. Another one is how much detail we have to expose about what different devices can do, because it's clear that different devices will do this differently. And just how to balance sort of improving what we have with adding new stuff. In terms of where we are, well, we've only been working on this spec about 2 months. One thing that I think is worth mentioning and was mentioned yesterday, and I know somebody asked me about and is going to say a bit more about their experience later on today, thank you, is about using the W3C media source extensions. And we'll hear a bit more about that later. One thing I do have to emphasize about this, though, as you saw maybe from the workflow, the spec is merely one step on a journey. HBBTV targeted advertising needs cooperation between broadcasters and manufacturers, or it's not going to happen. The HBBTV Association can do the best job in the world, but if that cooperation, if those discussions don't happen, the targeted advertising isn't going to happen. And unlike some organizations, HBBTV does not measure success by PDFs produced or similar. HBBTV success is participants in the industry getting value out of our work and consumers getting a better consumer experience out of our work. So that's the sort of the big one. I thought I would spend a little bit of time saying something about some of the less glamorous things. So, OPApps, we have a spec. I talked about bug fixes. So, we've got about 26 bug fixes agreed to this one, 7 more under consideration. There will be a new document of some kind at some point next year. It might be a new version of the OPApp spec. If you're an operator or somebody developing that, you need to be sensitized that there may be a new version of the OPApp spec. Or we may just publish a document with the differences in. So-called errata. Similarly, for 201 and 202, we have 33 bug fixes agreed, another 10 under consideration. There will probably be some kind of new document on that published next year. Another thing we're working on is application discovery over broadband. So we did a first phase of this a little while ago. What we're working on now is phase two, which will enable HBBTV services to reach consumers on TVs that get the broadcast through a set-top box. now. We had in the country discussion yesterday, Javi mentioned the growing percentage of Spanish users who get their TV through an IPTV set-top box. Similar situations apply in France. Similar situations apply in other countries in Europe. Poland, I believe, has something similar, but not IP, but satellite rather than IPTV. Norway, Eric was telling me yesterday, Wave Eric, about set-top box usage in Norway. So there's a selection of consumers who can't get HBB TV today because they get their TV through set-top boxes where, for various reasons, it's not there. And this one is initially based on the video and audio watermarking solution from ATSC 3.0, but we've sort of prepared it to make sure we can bring other technologies in as needed. Moving on, so once we have a spec, once we have some unit test descriptions, steering group approves the spec, it gets submitted to Etsy. Then next step is going out and getting quotations for the test suite. So we have a supplier evaluation group chaired by Stuart from LG. Stuart, do you want to wave your hand? So this is responsible for obtaining and evaluating the quotations from the suppliers. This is those of you who participate in similar organizations to HBB TV, this is a very unusual role. But actually, in the context of HBB TV, this is critical. So we have €800,000 budgeted for testing and interoperability this financial year. Previous years, I think we might have topped €1 million in one of the previous years. So getting the contracts right, picking the suppliers, making sure you do that in a way that is legally correct, that's all really important. So Stuart's group, it's recently worked on things like the ordering the test cases for the op apps, so getting the quotations, reviewing them, deciding who got the orders. Similarly, the HDR video, HFR video, NGA. Some stuff on media synchronization and subtitles. Also, other sort of contractual stuff around things like paid test material reviews. So once we've ordered stuff, then the stuff comes in, and it goes into the testing group. So the testing group, they've done 3 test suite releases during 2018, boringly named 1, 2, and 3. We got tired of version numbers. We were never interesting enough to come up with naming them after fruit or chocolate bars or whatever. So we just went with sequential numbering because anything else is confusing. So one thing I get asked is there a specific test suite release for a specific spec version? No. So each test suite release has tests for all spec versions. So for example, looking at 2018.3, we have 600 tests that apply to every single HBB TV spec version. And when people start thinking about what does that mean for backwards compatibility, it means a lot of the core functionality is tested using the exact same test, whether you're a 1.0, 1.5, 2.0, 2.0.1, 2.0.2. We have 900 tests that apply to 1.5, 2.0, etc. And finally, at long last, we have almost cleared the backlog of test cases for the 2.0, the new 2.0 stuff. I'm going to have to move on, I'm afraid. So one thing that we have going on is maintenance, repairing, reapproving. You can see some numbers in the slides when you look at them. But 2018.3 contains over 2,000 test cases, of which 1,600 are approved. And we're working on reviewing the new stuff. So looking forwards, so we have 2019 1 and 2 test suite releases. There will be more review, re-repairs. We hope to have the op-app tests and the HDR, HFR, NGA tests included. We will be processing the new ones as well, so the media synchronization and the more subtitle ones. We need more volunteers. Some of this stuff, HBB TV does pay for some reviewing, but actually, particularly for op-apps, we need more volunteers to review stuff. Or if you don't have engineers in your company, think about paying somebody to do some reviewing. That's a good way of getting it done. Improving interoperability. So Bob talked about this. So we have the HBB TV-DRM reference app. I won't say as much as Bob, but I know a lot of people were leaving before Bob got round to doing this at the end of yesterday, so I'm going to say a bit about it. So, two symposiums ago, I think it was in Madrid, we had a discussion, we had some people saying there's no existence, nobody's doing HPVTD-DRM, it's hard, it doesn't work, etc., etc., etc. So it's taken a while, but basically we did this to actually say, yes, it does work. And we didn't just pay somebody to do it, we actually paid somebody to run it on the products that are in the European market already. So this has been tested on more than 20 actual HPVTV receivers going back to 2013. And guess, somewhat surprisingly, and for the people who didn't think it would work, it did work. And a characteristic of this market is no TV manufacturer is going to fix bugs in a 2013 or 2014 product. So the fact that it worked meant that it has always worked. It's under an open source license, so you can reuse it as is. You can copy bits. You can look at what order it does things in, which API calls it makes with which parameters, and do the same thing in your app. And it's available on GitHub. The Dash validator, similar for the sort of the other end. So we paid for the Dash IF validator to be extended to support HPVTV and DVB Dash. And basically, you just use their validator, and it selects HPVTV mode based on the contents of the Dash MPD. More details in Bob's stuff, but if you missed it, it really is interesting, and it's about delivering value to members beyond just a PDF and beyond just the unit tests. So, looking forward on improving interoperability, so Bob said yesterday, I strongly support this. If you see interoperability problems, take them to Bob. This means particularly problems that apply on devices from multiple suppliers. If you see a problem with a Philips TV set, my company, Letitia is in the audience somewhere, just waving, please take them to Letitia directly. You don't need to take them to the IITF. It's only if you see it from three vendors, then that's indication of something systemic, and that's the sort of thing that IITF can help with. And they will triage. One thing they will do, and Bob mentioned this again, they will monitor usage of the reference app and the Dash validator. And if they're used enough, plug, hint, then they can be extended. So the validator can be extended to support new profiles of DVB Dash, and maybe the reference app can be extended to support some of the advanced bits that people sometimes struggle with, like multi-period Dash. This is the second to last slide and the last slide of substance. GDPR. So HPVTV commissioned a report on GDPR. There's a draft currently available to HPVTV members. There's quite a number of interesting points here. Time isn't going to allow me to go through these one by one, although I could easily. Okay, am I getting in?
No.
Okay. Just a few. So GDPR is the thing that applies to service providers. Device makers are far more impacted by this e-privacy thing, which seems to be subject to continuing delay. One thing that I would mention, and I'll mention this one and skip over the rest, really. Consultants like to emphasize consent as sort of the basis for processing any of this personal information. There are other things in GDPR that are the legal basis for processing personal information. One of them is called legitimate interest, and another one is compliance with legal obligation. If you get consultants in, they will tell you to do consent. Consent is the easiest for them to explain. But actually, legitimate interest and compliance with legal obligation may give a far better user experience than bothering the user with consent every time. Time doesn't allow me to do the rest. The final point on this one that I am going to do, and sorry, I'm going to go 30 seconds over. Even if your lawyer says something in your SAP or your service is legal, you should stop and think. What would happen if your app or service appeared on the front page of a national newspaper on a quiet news day? How much would your organization be damaged? Sometimes it doesn't matter that it's legal. If consumers if a journalist can present what you're doing in a way that consumers would find offensive, then you should stop and think. So, call to action, basically. I suspect there's a reasonable number of you are HBB TV members. If you are, please come and participate in the working group and task forces. There's plenty of opportunity. And if you're not, please come and join and participate. There we are.
Thank you very much, John. So please join Vincent, and we will have a brief chat, as long as we're allowed to. I see we've given 5 minutes. We will try to do the best out of it. And by the way, don't worry, all the slides will be made available later on, maybe, I think, beginning of next week, and you will get a password, and you can download them on the website, so you don't need to worry if you didn't catch everything. So I've got some questions through the Slido, and I'd like to start with a question to you, John, coming back to the ad exchange. If the 1.5 version already addresses this, and 2.0 makes it maybe even better, why do we need a specific specification that is addressing this topic at all?
Broadcaster opinions differ about what user experience and what advertising experience is good enough to meet market expectations in the short term and the medium term. So there is a view that actually market expectations won't be fully met until the broadcaster can actually do a frame-accurate replacement of a broadcast 30-second ad with a broadband-delivered 30-second ad. If you want to do that, then that is hard work. That certainly needs a new spec. If you look at what, for instance, the colleagues from Mediaset, and I don't remember whether IRT are showing this one as well, what they're showing outside, the whole timing of switching from the broadcast to the broadband and back again is distinctly variable, and actually it's not tested. There's nothing in our set of unit tests relating to that. So some of this stuff may work well enough for the early adopters at the beginning accidentally. That doesn't mean it's a suitable basis for an ongoing multi-billion euro business over the next 5 to 10 years.
Okay. So I'd like to have a question also for Vincent. Yesterday, we've heard that millennials are watching everything over their mobile phones, obviously. And now today, you mentioned that TV usage is actually really growing in a spectacular way, I think 145%. So how do you explain that sort of contradiction? Is it a contradiction?
It may appear like a contradiction, but I don't think it is a contradiction. I think two things would come to my mind to explain that. Number one, the world is not made of teenagers. Teenagers are important, they are influencers, everybody look at what teenagers do, but there are many other people than teenagers. And then, I think it was also mentioned yesterday, there are many kind of new habits of consuming content, and I think it's been the case for many of us, it's been the case for myself. You start to do an innovative use case with your mobile phone because it's an easy way to enter into a new thing. And then you realize it's nice, but it's a small screen. And the next thing you want is to have that same use case on your main TV screen, which is your TV set. So I don't think there is a contradiction. There is, on the contrary, a kind of an... I think it's very good news for HBB TV and the HBB TV members. It's the fact that something that emerged a few years ago, maybe as a threat, now becomes an opportunity.
Fair enough. So I know we've already running over time, but it's such a unique opportunity to have the president and vice chair of HBB TV. So I'd like to ask the audience if you have any other questions, maybe to address in person, not through Slido, but by voice. there isn't. So I'd like to ask one last question, even though it's a really a broad question, and it would be good to answer as sharp as possible. What is the winning strategy or plan of HBB TV in response to OTT? Maybe both of you can say a word on that.
Well, maybe I need to rehear the question precisely again, because
we are all kind of under threat by the OTT services. I think they mean streaming, VOD, and so on. And so what's the response of HBB TV and strategy for the future to really back that?
To open that the arms to OTT. I think the
embrace your
absolutely. I think if the broadcast world and HBB TV would try to build a wall against OTT, we would lose. And the broadcasters doing that would lose. I think the winning strategy is the strategy that is permitted by HBB TV, is to open the arms and create OTT offers which are tightly integrated with the traditional broadcast offers and make the consumer happy.
That sounds wonderful. John, you want to add something?
I was just going to say, make sure that HBB TV enables other things similar to Love Is TV that won the award yesterday evening. Make sure that similar services are enabled in other countries and be responsive to the needs of the broadcaster coalitions and platforms that are doing those sort of services. Because in the end, the killer application for HBB TV is enabling consumers to find and consume broadcaster AV content.
Wonderful last words, and I think that's worth a big applause for our two chairs. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So we were going to move on with the program, and it's time for the first round table. Following the keynotes of the chair and vice chair, we are now going to hear the response from the market, from important stakeholders, including broadcasters, manufacturers, and operators. And to moderate this round table, I'd like to ask Robert Briel. He's already coming. He's journalist, owner, and co-founder of Broadband TV News, and it is now your turn to moderate the next session. Thank you very much.
And I'd like to invite the following people. Marcus Dimpfel from Median Group and RTL. Stuart Savage from LG Electronics. Ian Medland from the DTG Tester. And Peter McEvert from the DVB. And Pascal Hippolyte from Dot Screen. Welcome. We got 34 minutes to discuss the future of HBB TV in a very challenging world. And may I ask each one of you to make a few opening remarks? I want to start at the very end with Pascal Hippolyte.
So, I'm Besson, founded Dot Screen with Stanislas Leridon 6 years ago, and we develop applications on many different screens, including, of course, HBB TV. We develop for Freenet, the main user interface in Germany. We did also the FranceSat application, a kind of first operator app in France, 5 years ago, in fact, with Ralph. You know very well him. He's a part of the certification and the specification of HBB TV. And we do also applications on Android TV, set-top box, smart TV, Roku, Apple TV, for companies like brand like ESPN in the US, CBS News in the US, OCS, HBO, Turner, Disney in Europe.
Okay, thank you. Peter.
Hi, my name is Peter McAvock. I'm chairman of the steering board of the DVV project and also an employee of the European Broadcasting Union, which is a well-known association of public service TV stations made famous by the Eurovision Song Contest. So obviously we're at an interesting crossroads in the business. I would argue that the challenges facing the industry today are greater than any of those in the past. The transition from black and white to color, analog to digital, standard definition to high definition, haven't seen as fundamental a change in the business as is taking place now. And it'll be interesting to hear on the panel today some of the thoughts and ideas about how we can grow the TV business, not just survive.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm Ian Midland from DTG. Those who don't know us, we are the Industry Association for the UK. We publish one of those dreaded local D books, which builds on HBB TV 2.0. One of my other tasks is running the DTG testing, which is a conformance test lab. I've been quite involved in the testing process in HBB TV over the years as well. So that's my background here. So I think the problem from my perspective is that I see two things. One, I want to push forwards on the next specifications, make sure that we've got a platform that's useful to everyone. But at the same time, from a testing and conformance background, I think we need to make sure that we're not running ahead of ourselves. Let's make sure that we're working with a platform of devices on a horizontal supply that works for everyone so that you can get universal application deployment.
Okay, thank you.
Stuart from LG. It's very difficult at this stage to say something that's new that hasn't been said before, but I'd like to probably emphasize comments from yesterday from Freeview that what generates success is collaboration and talking to each other. You don't get success if you just sit on a higher authority and mandate stuff downwards. That usually leads to confrontation or rejection. So talking between all ends of the ecosystem to make a win-win goal for everybody is critical. With my HBB TV hat on, we could do a lot more with more resource and more volunteer effort. We do as much as we can, given the people who make themselves available and the money we have available. But if people think we're working too slowly, we could do a lot more with more volunteer effort.
Okay, thank you. Marcus?
Yeah, Marcus. I'm head of strategy of RTL Journey, which belongs to RTL Group and Bertelsmann. And I think what's key is we've come a long way. We reached fantastic goals during the last 10 years. We have a lot more road to go, but we shouldn't lose what we have gained so far. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you are going into op apps, that shouldn't scrutinize what we reach with the classical HBB TV.
Okay, thank you. Meanwhile, there's a live poll now on Slido. So if you want to vote on that, then we can discuss the outcome for that, if I can see it. So please have a vote. Well, you're the broadcaster, and you're the one that is in direct contact with the audience. What do you see as challenges or possibilities in the near future?
Well, there are a lot of things that could risk the big success that mm-hmm. we have in HBB TV. So first is a mandatory requirement so that the signal is passed through, that the MVPDs don't block the signal, things that you take for granted now, but they haven't been there all the time. Then again, you have a fragmentation of the landscape, so we are heavily relying on standardization, harmonization, on the technical way. So it's great to have a standard, but then if it works completely different on every device and you have to test it, it's really a problematic situation. Because in the end, we can only provide it to the consumer if it's, as we're a private broadcaster, we'll have to refinance it somehow. Mm-hmm. And so if you would have to develop it for single platforms, it would be difficult, but there are also things that we'll have to work on. It's measurement. It's a way to expand the marketing where you have to work on accessibility. So it would be great for a consumer to have a much better way in in UI, UX, because the consumer, in the end, it's all about the consumer, and the consumer compares it to other alternatives, and that's why I was glad to hear that OTT is it's not an enemy. We don't consider us as a broadcast anymore. We are Germany's leading video provider, and the consumer likes to have it on the big screen. They like to see content on the small screen. Sometimes it's different, but that's, I think, we'll have to think about, and it's bringing content and services to the consumer.
Okay, yes, the RTL Group is across Europe very active in the new VOD OTT space. In the Netherlands, for instance, and I think in Germany,
we were pushing it from really from the very beginning with digital teletexts, with video services, with gaming applications, and we strongly believe in that. And we see that the that there's an industry move. You know, the podcasts are very strong on HBBTV, and we see that very strategically as one of the key roadmaps. And we will invest in the future even more into HBBTV services.
Pascal, you want to add to that? Because I think you will emphasize the
UX. Exactly. Yeah. In fact, if you look at the reality of HBBTV today in our office, this is a room with more than 120 devices. So when you talk about interoperability, it's weird to have so much devices to test if you want to be on the market. So yes, we have now the new test suite. Yes, we are working on the new Hub app. Yes, everybody's doing strong effort to manage interoperability, but at the end, the developers has to manage the fragmentation, and it's a huge cost, not only for the development and the maintenance, but also for the user experience. Because when we develop a user experience on HBBTV, we have to take care of about this fragmentation. We have to take care about how you will manage a remote control, how you will manage the navigation on so different CPU, memory footprint, devices at the end. And we really have to understand that we have to compete today with Android TV, with Apple TV, with Samsung Tizen, LG WebOS regarding the user interface. So if we want to have a good user experience, we need to supply the same kind of tool. And this is not the case today with interoperability. Maybe coming back to Hub app, because when you press a red button on a specific channel, on RTL, for example, it's not a big deal if you have to wait for 1 second or 2 seconds having a nice spinner on screen before going to the right page, the targeted page. But on Hub app, when you press mute, when you press paperless, you need an immediate feedback from the TV with this feature. So that means that if we want to move to Hub app, we really have to find a solution for fragmentation, not only on the technical side, but also on the UX. And I think UX has to be a part of the certification of a device. I don't say that we have to have only very powerful screens, very powerful user interface. I'm not saying that we have to be able to target and to adapt the UX regarding the different device. And it's not possible today, or you have to manage whitelisting, you have to do a lot of tests, and even at the end, the user experience will not be good.
Okay, maybe we can have a word of opinion from the manufacturer, from LG.
On which particular aspect?
Also, as a manufacturer, you incorporate HBBTV, but you also have your own web OS.
Yes, well,
so,
you know,
which really is in competition.
We're in a competitive market. We have to compete. We have to try to make our individual products better than our competitors. That's the nature of the market. You can't stop that. It's never going to go away. But having said that, we will work with open standards, and obviously HBBTV is critical to that. I understand the desire for the broadcasting community for all TVs to look identical. It makes life easier for them. Unfortunately, that would result in a very uncompetitive TV market, and it wouldn't generate interest from us, and we would probably, a lot of us would actually probably leave that market. So we have to be allowed to compete. We have to be allowed to make our products worthwhile to the consumers and provide other stuffs that the broadcasters either don't want to provide or provide alternative services. Testing user interfaces is a nightmare. It's subjective. It's very, very difficult to test something that is subjective. It wastes a huge amount of time, costs a hell of a lot of money, I agree
yeah,
that
but it's key to success.
It's key to success, but you know the responsibility of those also on the broadcasters to make good, simple user interfaces. We heard yesterday from Australia what they want is simplicity and reliability. We've talked or we see that the association or everybody said, oh, you know, we have to adopt the next wave of web technologies. I look at some implementations on my computer of implementations of the latest, greatest things from the web, and what were useful, usable websites have become far too complicated and unusable. Mm. They look pretty, but they're completely non-functional anymore.
Yeah,
so we've got to be very careful about what are this new technology we do adopt. And again, I'm always been a fan of simplicity. Yeah. It makes things much easier for the consumer.
Well, I want to change the subject a bit. In the Slido questionnaire, let's go, the poll that's going on now, most people think that targeted advertising will be have the most impact. So maybe Pascal wants to say something and Marcus?
I fully agree regarding this. Of course, we need to change something on that, and maybe this is the next evolution, as you mentioned before, for HBBTV. But I really think that HBBTV 2.0 we have today is really complete, thanks to the OPAP feature. We have everything, even for broadband, for example. We are not using broadcast. We are not using a lot the broadcast feature of the HBBTV. And I think it would be very useful for countries not fully connected, like, for example, in Africa, where mobile is stronger than the regular connection. So I think we can manage. We have the right tool to have good experience. But coming back to the advertising, I think for sure it's key for the market, but it will be very, very, very difficult, again, because the fragmentation. I think Google raised the point yesterday. It will be, for sure, a huge challenge.
Yes?
I think targeted advertising for sure is key. From a public service broadcaster perspective, targeted advertising is not the only game in town. But the whole concept of having a personalized service available to the consumer, targeted advertising is one aspect of that, but there are many others, is the key to ensuring that there is relevance across different types of devices. For the larger TV set, targeted advertising, I think, in terms of the current feature development, will be absolutely key in ensuring that there is an appropriate partnership developed right across the industry to monetize the potential of this, because we've seen that it has huge potential. We know all the pay TV platforms deploy targeted advertising solutions already. Making this available to the wider free-to-air public is going to be very important, at least in terms of ensuring the partnerships that are necessary to generate revenue from these new features.
Well, some public Marcus, go ahead.
Yeah, maybe if I look at what is able to choose, I would also say targeted advertising is more important than voice, which will of course be important in terms of user interface and user experience. But I think it's important to look at what's targeted advertising. Is it the holy grail? No, that is some necessity that the media agencies and the media spenders are asking for. They learned that and we'll have to provide it. And if we are not able to provide it, we'll have problems to refinance our services. So I think it was Vincent or John who mentioned multi-billion dollar market. That is not an additional multi-billion dollar market.
No, it's
a replacement.
Yeah, yeah.
Because a P&G, and if you look to what pay TV operators did, I mean, it's one thing if you're coming from a very low basis, you don't have the classical spenders, and you're going for some still spots from a mom and pop shop and put it on Sky AdSmart. But in a situation where you have broadcasters, a P&G doesn't spend more if it's targeted advertising. They spend less. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes I hear everybody is looking for they're already sliding the bear's fur, but I think the basic assumption is completely wrong.
Okay, thanks. I'm going now to the questions. There's a question for you, Marcus. Aren't you afraid that viewers mainly experience HPPTV as a tool for targeted advertising?
No, that would be bad. So it's always a balance. If you wouldn't provide content, then of course the viewer would probably see it like that. But then again, it's a question, would there be a difference if it's coming via HPPTV or if it's coming via, you know, the normal signal? Mm-hmm. That is one thing, but we have always been very strong in pushing content over HPPTV, although knowing that, especially in the very early days, it's not refinancing because, you know, the reach was limited and there are other ways, but We initiated a roadmap to even put more content, mm-hmm. long-form content, et cetera, into that direction. So yes, if there would be no content on HPPTV, probably HPPTV wouldn't work.
Yes. Yeah. But RTL in Germany has been one of the pioneers, having been active for 10 years. In the beginning, very simple, and now more sophisticated. Is it still, looking at the future, it's still worth your while going ahead, definitely?
100% for us. It's one of the strategic pillars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I said, we will even increase our investment spending in HPPTV.
Okay. One more question from the audience. Can we reduce elements of the HPPTV specs, make it simple, remove unused features? Ask one anonymous. Yes?
Yes.
Next question.
The short answer is that as part of the development of... So I think if the truth be known, the jump from HPPTV 1.5 to HPPTV 2.0 was at best very large. And the number of additional features that were included and the migration of the existing technologies was very ambitious. And I think as we look at the further development of the specification, one thing is clear is that many markets are still deploying HPPTV 2. In fact, many have not yet. But that is the game in town at the moment. But as HPPTV considers its future specifications, it will look to try to ensure that we do not replicate that big leap that took place from 1.5 to 2. As part of that process, not only do you consider new features, technology evolution, but you also consider features that we could deprecate. There were fashionable features at the time of the development of HPPTV 2.0 that may not have been implemented in the market and that may be useless, in which case, let's be brave enough to seek industry collaboration around trying to deprecate them in order to make sure that HPPTV is just as complex as it needs to be to ensure an exciting user experience, but is not any more complex than it absolutely needs to be.
Yeah.
But on the other side, if the integration is simpler, it would be great, for example, when we have a TV on the market, to be sure it will be evolved in the next, for the next 2 years, 3 years, updated with the new version of HPPTV. This is what, with Android TV, for example, when you supply a set-top box on the market to Android TV, you sign a contract with Google saying this device will be able to be updated with the next generation, next two generation of Android TV. I think we need something like that from the manufacturers. We need sorry, you're the only one here.
Taking a beating, aren't
we? We need manufacturers more involved in this process, not only on certification, but on maintenance on HPPTV on the devices.
I guess you're wanting to respond to that. Yeah, the economics of TVs is very, very low margin. We do not have the resources to do that. It's just the simple economics that the resource team moves from 1 year to the next year. When that at the moment, we are fully working on our 2019 products. If we have to develop, look after bugs in 2018 products, that work on development 2019 work stops, and we have to go back and look at bugs. Mm-hmm. We can do that for perhaps 1 year, 2 years, but there is no economic justification to go back much further than that. I'm afraid that's just the way it is. If you want a completely different TV market that can do that, the cost of your TVs is going to go up in order for us to be able to resource that. But the problem is that it's such a competitive market that our competitors, we all keep our costs as low as possible. The prices are driven low as possible. And that's just, unfortunately, the way it is. In an ideal world, yes, we'd all love to be able to upgrade products and keep them up to date. But again, the contrary to that is that if we were to do that, it would reduce TV sales. And, you know, that would even be worse for us. You know, that would hit us even further. Our guys in Korea, they're not wedded to the TV business. We're an consumer electronics business. And if there's no money in TVs, people will leave. You look at the number of TV companies that have left the business in the last 10 years. They haven't done that because they can't make money out of it. They've done that because they're losing, but they can't make money out of it. So it has to be a balance. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's the way the TV market works.
But on the other side, there's no economy to launch a project on HBB 2.0 if we will reach only 10% of the countries. So if we have to wait 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years to have a huge amount of audience, then...
But that's another thing that TV manufacturers cannot afford to do. We cannot precede markets with huge numbers of devices. We pay licenses on the technologies in our TVs the moment we start installing them. We cannot afford to put 5 years' worth of license fees into devices. And we've done this before, we've got bitten. And those services have never materialized. Meanwhile, we've paid a lot of money for something that never happened. Unfortunately, again, that's the way the market works. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the market or the industry wants to come together and put a huge amount of money and resource into that, we could solve that problem. But that's not going to happen, unfortunately.
Okay. It also relies on more public visibility of timelines of potential technologies.
Yeah, I mean, we really want, you know, broadcasters to commit to services. Yeah. I mean, on that list there was NGA. I mean, everyone understands the brilliant features that NGA can deliver to us. We've got NGA in our devices. We have grave doubts that the broadcasters are going to produce NGA in the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. They all see it's great to do it. All this personalization service, all this, object audio, brilliant. We've got great doubts. Yeah. We're already paying for those license fees in those devices.
So I think that if you're paying for the license fees in those devices just for the broadcast industry, I think it's probably not ideal. But I don't suspect you are just for the broadcast industry, right? No. The next generation audio is a key issue. The technology in the terminal, of course, is required in order to experience the full benefits. Speaking as an organization that does a lot of production of live events, doing next generation audio at live events is a non-trivial problem. And I remember a time when the Eurovision Song Contest was produced in stereo, and that was like 3 years ago. So I know you probably think it doesn't need much more than stereo, but only recently have we been able to do a 5.1 mix of the event. And last year we did trials of next generation audio at the event. We'll do a more complete production of next generation audio at this event. But these are technology showcases. The actual complexity involved in setting up these things, what you want to be able to do is you want to be able to produce an event without necessarily having to have the experts from the technology providers there in their hundreds. We're not there yet. Yeah. At least not for the events that we're involved in.
And the thing that was missing off that list for me was high dynamic range, wide colour gamut, better video pictures.
Right, which, to be honest, is absolutely key in terms of the user experience today.
And, you know, we've just seen at the World Cup, there were some fantastic pictures came out of that. But there were also some very ordinary pictures came out of that. And there's one term that cropped up at IBC was called it snowflake production. No production looks the same.
Well, let's get back to HBBT. Because there's one more question there's a couple of more questions from the audience. One is, how can the HBB consortium convince the cable operators, the distribution platforms, to carry the signal through, because that's one of the obstacles there clearly is, that, well, not everyone gets the HBB TV signal, for instance, in the Netherlands, where the cable operators.
So, yeah. I mean, RTL is probably better placed to answer this than most, but I think HBB TV has put in place a mechanism through which the HBB TV services can be found without necessarily having the core table delivered in the broadcast stream. Now, it's not, I mean, it's a solution to a problem, or it's a workaround to a problem that exists. And as we know, there is great regulatory debate in all of the markets where HBB TV is active regarding how to position HBB TV versus the must-carry obligations for the cable operators. And each country is a different cable market. It's, the dynamics are different. Who pays whom is different. These are complex areas. Meanwhile, back on Earth, you've got the incessant march of the OTT providers who are eating into the core proposition of some of the cable operators. It's a very complex situation, and HBB TV is a smaller part of a much bigger picture. Mm-hmm. In terms of technology, HBB TV has provided mechanisms that will facilitate access, but they need to be applied within the markets that are affected.
Maybe I add on that, because I think the chance, so it won't happen during regulatory forces or something like that. So MVPDs will only use HBB TV if they see a commercial benefit. And for a long time being, everybody was going for his own proprietary infrastructure, like every ID TV manufacturer was going, and then they're cutting off because it's an expensive thing to operate. And if HBB TV is able to provide the services, the content services, the commercial services that are needed to fund the content service, at least from the private broadcasters, then HBB TV is an alternative to the operators once they have to change, or they want to change from a proprietary tech stack to a standard tech stack. Because if they don't do that to HBB TV, they will go to the same, it will happen the same road that happened to the IDTV manufacturers. They will go to Android, or they will go to some other US company's tech stack, and they will be just having a commercial relationship to the consumer. So I think, indeed, during the next, 1 to 3 years, there's a big chance, if HBB TV really, if 2.0 is pushed, and the cross-device functionalities and the user experience is high enough, that they could then switch to HBB TV. And some smaller cable operators do that already, but the big ones are still, thinking about, do I do the proprietary way, or will I go to a standard? But at some point of time, they will also go for a standard, and then it's on us together to make that alternative HBB TV more convincing than US tech stack.
Yeah. Well, of course, I think two of the main competitors on the market, or challengers, are Android TV and maybe Apple TV.
Yes.
Some of the operators now even replacing their proprietary set-top box with an Apple TV box.
Yeah.
So does anyone want to comment on that?
But that's exactly what I meant.
Yeah.
It's a quick fix to go. Let's say I don't do as a TV manufacturer or as an operator, to say, okay, I don't do my own set-top boxes. I just ship a Apple TV box. But it comes at a price. And you have to think about short-term economic value versus long-term viability. And at some point of time, if you look to what's happening on Android TV, the shelf space that people get on their own device is getting less and less.
Yeah.
So, but it's about the quality. It has to be an alternative, and it has to be able to fulfill the needs of the consumers and the content aggregators.
Even if you launch a set-top box on the market today for a telco, today you have two choices, Android TV or Linux-based, HTML5-based UI. And many of them are based on OIPF, so the history of HBB TV. So HBB TV, for sure, is an option now regarding Android TV. So more than carrying only a signal, we have to explain to the telco that HBBT, thanks to the OPAP, is a solution today for them.
Yeah. Well, we only got 2.5 minutes left, so I'd like to ask each one of you very brief closing remarks on the future of HBBTV. Yeah?
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of parts of the standard that are yet to be exploited, and those are the ones that are going to be really interesting. There's already a lot of work by the BBC in the UK to do with media synchronization, looking at putting in new audio, second screen. I think those are the sorts of things that where we start seeing something other than just an alternative to OTT. And that will make it easier to get the cable companies involved as well.
Stuart, maybe?
I think it's been said already, you know, success for HBBT is not necessarily producing a specification every year. Success is number of consumers using these services and growing that. And I think for me, the priority is to grow that in the next few years rather than be wedded to trying to produce new specifications. We've already seen Lovis TV based itself on 1.5, so it's good enough for them. There's obviously a lot of mileage in the current specs.
Okay. Peter?
I think one more minute. So I think it's very important to realise that any broadcaster looking to position itself over the coming years has to have a position and has to have not just a position, but has to have a vibrant HBBTV service as part of its portfolio. That's the game in town. HBBTV is absolutely essential to that strategy.
Okay, well, thank you all. This red light is now blinking and being very strict, so we'll thank you all for participating, and let's hope for a bright future for HBB.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you to the panelists. We are now coming to the first coffee break. Get the next slide. We would like to thank Yutazat for his support. They are making it possible. So enjoy the coffee break. Don't forget to stroll by the exhibitors. And please come back in half an hour for the next roundtable discussion. The panelists, please don't forget to come to the photo call.